So, I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me. I didn't have to travel too much, fortunately. So I am in here at Toronto, not as Microsoft as the program says. So I'd like to talk about a project, a little project of mine, which is very close to my heart because it has relationship to group theory, and I started as a group theorist, as a PhD student. So the project is that study regularity and removal lemmas for graphs with symmetries. So graphs where the automorphism group is non-trivial. So here is a little history about these things. So the regularity lemma in its original form was developed by Semmeridy. And it's a very powerful tool in combinatorics for dense graphs. So the triangle removal lemma, which you probably all know, was proved by Ruja and Semmeridy. Is that correct, by the way? Is the first proof is Ruja Semmeridy. And then there is the so-called generalization of it to hypergraphs, the hypergraph regularity method. And I should list the following names here. So Rödl, Skokan, Nagle, Schacht, and independently Gower. Came up first with a method which actually yields the analogy of the triangle removal lemma for hypergraphs, the so-called simplex removal lemma. And then Tao and Ishigami generalized it. Ishigami gave a different proof. And myself and Gábor Elek, we developed the method which I would call the ultra product method. And that basically it also proves the removal lemma and the regularity lemma, but I have to mention here that it's also suitable for putting extra structures on the graph, like groups or everything which can be axiomatized, because taking ultra products of structures preserves these kind of structures. So when you go to this infinite object, how our method goes, we also see those axiomatizable structures. So for example, if group acting on the graph, groups are acting on the graph and we take the ultra product, I don't want to go into the details, the talk is not about this, but we see also a group acting on this infinite object, and actually it turns out that it's a compact topological group, and you can see things immediately from this language that you don't really see in the finite setting. And then you can prove these things in the finite setting. And that was actually another motivation for me for this project. I also mentioned a beautiful discovery by Jozsef Solymosi is that the hypergraph removal lemma implies the multidimensional Semmeridy theorem. And this also shows that it's a powerful tool. So let me make one more comment about the ultra product method that we developed with Gábor Elek. So this gives you basically a finite a correspondence principle between finite combinatorics and estimates and infinite objects, which are measurable objects, and precise algebraic statements. So there you don't get estimates, you get precise algebraic statements. For example, the triangle removal lemma in this setting sounds simply that if you have a zero measure triangle in this object, whatever it is, then you can remove a zero measure edges in a way that you eliminate all the triangles. And the proof is really simple. You just take the density points of this set, which is the set formed by the edges, and you remove all the density points, and the Lebesgue density theorem says that the set of you remove the non-density points, but those have measure zero, so it's done once you have the correspondence principle. Okay? So, and then I somehow, it became suspicious that on the other hand, the set of density points was somehow invariant under this ultra product of the groups. So maybe there is a group invariant version of the original triangle removal lemma by Ruja and Semmeridy. So I saw a statement from this infinite setting I couldn't prove it directly in the finite setting, but I saw this statement and then I got just interested in this whole thing. So, another motivation was, by the way, a paper by Dan Green that I will mention soon. So, let me first state the original triangle removal lemma. So, for every epsilon, there is a delta bigger than zero, such that if G has at most delta times VG, number of points, cube triangles, then one can remove at most a little fraction of the edges, like epsilon times number of points squared edges, to make G triangle free. So here is a very natural question. Can you make this removal in a way that you preserve the symmetries of the underlying graph? You don't damage the symmetries. So first I tell you why is it not trivial, and then I tell you why is it simple. So it is not trivial. How would you do this? So you would say that, okay, let's just use the triangle removal lemma as it is, and then we get that there is a small edge set that intersects all the triangles. Now let's take all the G images, the images of this set under the automorphism group, and take the union of this. And that will be, if you delete this set, that doesn't damage the symmetries of the graph. There is a problem with it. So if the graph has a bounded number of symmetries, then you don't increase your set too much. But what if you have a Cayley graph that's a graph with n points and it has at least n automorphisms? So that way you increase your set enormously. So it's not obvious that this statement is true. And actually, I was stupid enough to come up with a 5 pages long proof for it first, before I realized that there is a much, much simpler argument. And I actually developed some kind of version of the regularity lemma, which is symmetric under the automorphism group. And actually, I'm happy that I had this first proof because it led me to another discovery. Okay, so I don't regret it, but now I tell you a proof which is so simple that it's even embarrassing. So don't be offended by the fact that I tell you a proof which is this simple. So let's look at the orbits of the automorphism group of the graph on the edges. So these vertical potatoes are the orbits, this time on the edges and not on the vertices, okay? So here is a little lemma which immediately shows that the previous thing is true. So assume that you have a certain subset of the edges which I colored red. So that red set is a subset of the edges such that it intersects all the triangles. Then I claim that I can replace this red set by another set which is at most 3 times as big as the red set, and it's a union of orbits and it intersects all the triangles. Okay? That's clearly enough for my claim. So what is the proof? So the proof is very simple. You take those orbits where the density of the red set is at least 1/3, okay? And your new set is just the union of those orbits, okay? So it is clear that the union of those orbits is at most 3 times as big as the original red set, first. Second, I claim that it intersects all the triangles. Assume that it's not the case. Then there is a triangle such that all of its 3 edges are in orbits of the automorphism group in which the red set has density less than, strictly less than 1/3. So apply a random element from the group G. So what happens with an edge of this triangle? For every edge, it is true that it has probability less than 1/3 that it intersects the red set. So there will be a version of this triangle which doesn't intersect the red set. And that's a contradiction. Is that clear? So, because these are orbits of the group, so if any image of a triangle is again an image, is again a triangle, so if you apply a random group element and you find, so click, okay, done. Okay, maybe this is, you can look at it as a little observation, but first of all, a second one, that of course the argument that I told you is exactly the same way works instead of one third with another thing, other constant, it generalizes to the hypergraph removal lemma and directed versions, whatever, the same argument, right? Instead of taking orbits of edges, you can take orbits of hyperedges or directed edges, the same thing is true. So you can make the extra assumption in the removal lemma that you that you don't damage the symmetries of objects. So here's an interesting theorem by Ben Green, which says that if you have a small, if you have a, not small, you have a subset in an abelian group A, such that this x plus y equals z has little o a squared solution, absolute value of a squared solution, then you can decompose S as S prime union T, such that S prime doesn't have any solution and T has little o a elements. Okay? Now, it is easy to see that this follows directly. So Ben Green used Fourier analysis, whatever, but it follows directly from the symmetry preserving regularity lemma. Why? Because it's really simple. You take the Cayley graph of this set S. You do it a direct. It's a, no, this time it's a directed graph. So we connect two elements X and Y in the abelian group if their difference is in your set S. Okay? So what does it mean that you have a configuration of this type? So these are three directed edges. In this fashion, that means exactly that you find a solution of this equation in your abelian group. So the only observation is that okay, the symmetry preserving removal lemma says that if you have a small number of solutions of this equation, you have to multiply everything by the number of the size of the abelian group. You have basically little o a squared configurations of this, a cubed configuration of this form. That means that we can remove directed edges from here to preserve the symmetries of this Cayley graph. But on the other hand, it's easy to see, it's one line, that if you remove orbits, fewer orbits of the group, then it is the same as removing a small set of the elements and then taking the Cayley graph, because each orbit corresponds to an element of S, each orbit of an S. So it's trivial, okay? It's just an application of this. And of course, this true for arbitrary groups, first of all, so we already generalized Ben Green's result, true for arbitrary expressions of the form like this, because you don't have to use the triangle removal lemma, you can use other removal lemmas. So for example, if you have this expression here, then again you can formulate a similar statement with little o g to the 6 and little o g, and you can think of other applications, and I don't want to go into the details, you can play with it, whatever you write up, you can look at the density of this configuration in a Cayley graph and play with it with the equation that it gives. So it gives something. But, so the thing I wanted to illustrate it is that there is a symmetry preserving version of the removal lemma. Now let me, some of you might dislike the following statement, but I feel very important to state it. So actually, I had an ergodic theoretic motivation for the symmetry preserving removal lemma. So let me define a removal lemma in dynamical systems in general. So a dynamical system is just generally, you have a group G and it's measure preservingly act on a measure space, okay? Now we say that the pair GH, these are two groups and H is contained in G and usually they are infinite groups, okay? We say that this pair of groups satisfies the removal lemma if for every finite set in G and epsilon bigger than zero, there is a delta bigger than zero such that for every G dynamical system D, okay, and H invariant set Z in D, so you have, so again, G is acting on a measure space that I denote by D. So if you have an H invariant set Z in this dynamical system, such that it's G translates, I mean that it's S translates, have a small intersection, then you can remove a small fraction of this H invariant set inside the dynamical system and still get an H invariant set, such that the new set has an empty intersection, the G translate. Okay, why is it interesting? So it's, I'm not saying that this is true for every pair of H and G and H. I am asking this, but I proved it for one particular, in one particular situation. If G is the group S infinity and H is the stabilizer of the first K, this is the finitely infinite symmetric group, and you take the stabilizer of the first K integers, that's the subgroup. This is just one fixed pair of group and subgroup. Then I claim that GH satisfies the removal lemma. Okay, and what? But this implies the symmetry preserving hypergraph removal lemma. So, and it's more or less equivalent, but in a very, very non-trivial way. So to prove this, it's not that, I mean, it's a complicated thing to prove this. I just want to illustrate how it implies this symmetry preserving removal lemma. It teaches something, so it's interesting. So let's take a graph G, and of course you can look at the edge set of G as just a subset of V squared. Now we come up with a S-infinity dynamical system, namely you take the vertex set raised to the infinite power, okay? You take the uniform measure on this. And, I'm not really interested in this dynamical system. I want to consider a factor of this dynamical system, D. And this is the following. I just consider those sets in this dynamical system which are invariant under the automorphism group of the graph. So once again, the automorphism group is acting on V. So it's acting on V infinity by the diagonal action. So that's it's a nice continuous action, finitely managed. It's a finite group. So D star is a nice dynamical system, and you can model your graph G in this dynamical system in the following way. That since we have V infinity, we have enough space to model something which lives on V squared. In other words, you take the projection of this V infinity to the first two coordinates and you take the pre-image of A. It's a cylinder set. It's a perfectly nice measurable set and it will be in D star. So you just apply that dynamical system removal lemma and what you get is exactly that you find an out G invariant small subset. I don't want to go into the details of this. I just want to say that behind this hypergraph regularity lemma and all these things, there might be a much more general thing about dynamical system, because the hypergraph removal lemma is just one particular pair of groups. But I don't know any pair of groups for which it's not true, by the way. I really haven't checked heavily because it's really hard to check something like this. I'm just asking you, maybe there are people who can answer this question in this audience. So it's a group theoretic version of the removal lemma. Now let me get to my next topic, which is the symmetry preserving regularity lemma. So basically, I want to extend the original regularity lemma in a way that the regular partition sees the symmetries of the graph. And the good news is that there is a nice statement. So I just drew a picture about the original regularity lemma, which is the third three members of the sequence. So that's just the classical. What does it say? You start with a graph G. Then you can approximate it in L1. That means that you just change a little epsilon n squared fraction of the edges. You can modify your original G such that you get an extremely regular partition of the vertex set into D parts. And when I say regularity lemma, I usually mean the strong version of it. And that means that the degree of regularity of the individual blocks can be made dependent on the number of blocks. Okay? The way how you make it dependent gives you different strengths of the regularity lemma. Anyhow, so that means that basically this matrix in cut norm is very close to its density matrix. Okay? So the second thing is the second distance is measured in the cut norm. Okay, this distance. That thing is the classical regularity lemma, as it is. I want to add a new part, namely that you can approximate the, so first of all, the green thing is the new part in this regularity lemma. First of all, we can assume that the density matrix of that partition is almost OJ invariant, okay? That means that if you, so the automorphism of group of G is of course acting on the vertices, so it's also acting on the row and column set of these matrices, so it has a natural action on all the matrices, right? It's trivial. So we can ask about the images of such a density matrix under the automorphism group of G. And first of all, we can add that OG, that this density matrix is almost OG invariant, meaning that if you apply a group element, then it's very close in the L1 norm. Okay? But to see this is easy, but I prove that it's strong enough, the regular partition, then it's true. But the second part is more interesting. It says that you can approximate this density matrix again in L1. I'm not sure about the constant, I think 2 epsilon is enough, with a matrix which has rank at most D, so the number of partitions, such that it is perfectly invariant under the group action. I will tell you why is it important. First, just here is the sketch of the proof. So I claim that if FD is small, I didn't tell you about FD. So FD is basically the distance of the second matrix from the third matrix in the cut norm. And the regularity lemma says that basically you can require it for an arbitrarily decreasing function F. So basically, you substitute the number of parts into this arbitrary function f, and you can require that the second and the third member are fd close in the cut norm. Okay? I say that if fd is small enough, then you get this almost invariant. And you can see it easily because, and this is just a sketch, but to get an intuition, it's more like a high school type problem. So this is an easy statement. So here is your first partition, the second partition. And if you apply a group element to such a regular block, then it gets somewhere here. It will intersect many other blocks. But since we assume that these parts are very regular, this thing here, this intersection, shows that if we have density P here, and this new block that it intersects has density P2, then the P1 and P2 has to be close to each other. Of course, it's not true because there is this so this is not invariant, of course, under the automorphism group. There is this error, so you have to take it into consideration. You can work it out. It's a little bit technical, but nothing deep about it. second step. We just stupidly average the action of the group G on this density matrix A. We get a matrix A double prime, which is perfectly G invariant. The problem with it is that it doesn't have bounded rank. But here is a geometric picture. A double prime is G invariant, and if you look at the manifold of rank D elements in the matrix manifold, then it's close to this manifold. So you want to find a point which is close to it, is on this manifold, and is again G invariant, okay? So one natural try is to take the closest element to A double prime in the Frobenius norm. And if there is a unique solution to this, then that has to be also G invariant, right? Okay, there is some problem with it. In many cases, you can prove that there is a unique solution, but if there is some degeneration with the eigenvalues, then you don't get it. But then there is, again, a technical issue that you can solve easily. So it's not very hard, but you can prove actually that there is a rank which is a little bit smaller than D, and there is a unique solution and still close enough, whatever. So it's not hard. So what is it good for, this whole thing? So this last matrix is perfectly G invariant. So the row space of A prime is invariant under the automorphism group of G. So we representation theorists call it a representation, if you have such a subspace, of the automorphism group G. Okay? And it has a bounded dimension. So basically, you relate the Semeradi partition with a bounded dimensional representation of the automorphism group of G on this, so a sub-representation. The automorphism group is acting on C to the N, where this is C to the vertex set of G, and this is a bounded dimensional sub-representation. And you can relate basically the Semeradi partition to a bounded dimensional sub-representation, an arbitrary strong Semeradi partition. Let me emphasize that. So, for example, this shows immediately that if out G has no low-dimensional representation on the vertex set on this space, except for the trivial one, which is the constant vector, then the graph G is quasi-random. So, and this was first observed by Gauert, who proved that Cayley graphs of groups which have where the second smallest representation degree is big, the Cayley graphs are those groups are quasi-random. For example, if you take the symmetric group there, or any increasing sequence of simple groups, for example, then there is the trivial representation, and any other representations have unbounded or growing degree. So, but this is also applies for any automorphism group. So G doesn't necessarily have to be a Cayley graph. But anyhow, this is just one observation. Observation two, which is, I think, is interesting. So let me first mention a theorem by Jordan. If you have a finite subgroup of G, L, and C, then G has an abelian subgroup of bounded index M factorial. So what does it mean to us? That means that there is basically a structure theorem for dense Cayley graph, because that means that you have this bounded dimensional representation, and most of it just only sees an abelian part of the automorphism group. So there is a bounded factor which is coming from a finite group, and the rest it looks like an abelian group. So what does it mean? That means that if you look at an arbitrary Cayley graph from a big distance, what you see is basically similar to the Cayley graph of an abelian group, Plus, there is this small thing, which is the small thing actually can be how to say? It's not small in a sense that it's closing any norm, L1 norm or so, but it's small in a sense that you can basically decompose the graph into finitely many parts that, in a way, these parts are already abelian in some sense. Okay, so that gives you a structure theorem for general dense scaly graphs. And it says that if you look at them from a far distance, then basically you see just a bounded group action and a big abelian group, which is just Fourier analysis. Okay, so that actually shows that you can use even Fourier analysis for any type of scaly graph. And here is the general remark that regularity lemma for scaly graphs of groups is basically that theorem that I presented you just shows that is the same as representation theoretic methods for the set itself. So in other words, Fourier analysis. It gives you a correspondence between Fourier analysis for sets and regularity lemmas for their Cayley graph. Okay? Of course, then at this moment you can ask, okay, what about hypergraphs? So regularity lemma, hypergraph regularity for symmetric hypergraphs, what does it correspond to? So I'm still working on this. I think it's an interesting question. I have some partial results in this direction. I think I don't really have, so I don't, but I think I don't have anything fundamental yet, but from that ultra product method, I see that something interesting must be true. So if you go back to the graph case, what happens is that the structure theorem that I told you about Cayley graph translates to an interesting statement in the infinite setting. And this interesting statement is the following. If you look at an infinitely big graph from an infinite distance, a Cayley graph, then what you see is basically the action of a compact topological group which is composed of a profinite group and an abelian group. I told you the statement that you see a bounded finite group and some abelian part. Now, in the limit, it translates to this language that you see a profinite group and some abelian part. Okay? So, in other words, some interesting compact action appears in the limit. Now, for hypergraph, I started to analyze whether there is some similar compact action in the limit, and what kind of representation theory does it correspond to. I think I managed to prove that there is a similar type of compactness, but I couldn't really translate it back to the language that we like to use. Anyhow, so much about hypergraph, but let me tell you very interesting theorem by Dan Green. So let S be a subset of an abelian group. Assume that it has density alpha. Then the theorem says that there is a difference D such that there are many three-term arithmetic progressions, namely as many as in the random setting. Okay? So that proof relies on Fourier methods, and I want to mention that this new symmetry-preserving regularity lemma also gives a proof for this fact. I discussed this proof with Ben Green, and he told me that it looks very different from his proof. I didn't quite understand his proof, but he says that it's different from his proof. So it's probably it's another kind of understanding of the situation, and let me just outline the proof of it because I think it teaches something. So how do you find such a difference D? Let's take the Cayley graph of the group G, let's take the Cayley graph G of the set S in A, and just apply the symmetry preserving regularity lemma. So then we find a bounded dimensional representation of the Abelian group A. Okay? So we decompose this bounded dimensional representation into linear representations, lambda 1, lambda 2, and lambda d. And then we introduce a metric on the Abelian group A by saying that the distance of two elements is just this. You take the differences in the values in these linear representations and you sum them. So basically, this, roughly speaking, what we can prove, and this is just a sketch of the sketch of the proof, because we have to also develop some strengthening of the counting lemma in this situation. But the statement is that if in this norm G is close to the trivial element, then basically it's with a high probability, very high probability, it will be a good difference. So in other words, it doesn't just tell us that there exists such a D, it tells us where to find them in a representation theoretic way. It basically tells you that so these kind of G's have the property that they not only fixes these matrices, the density matrix of the regular partition, approximately, but they fix them in almost like element-wise with some errors. That's the message of this whole thing, basically. And that helps. The way how I prove this, the Ben-Green result is to, again, apply the same trick, the Ruja-Samaridi trick for proving Roth theorem using regularity lemma, but I am a little bit more careful, and I need actually a variation of the counting lemma to make use of these things here. But it's technical, so I didn't have the time to explain this in detail, but... So if you forgive me, then I finish the talk earlier because...